Hello, everybody. Welcome back to H10 Hanshin Tigers English News. Today, for me, is March the 12th, 2016, and this is episode 20. In today's episode, I've got a special guest that is going to share with us a little bit about the Yakult Swallows, so we can learn more about the team, how their season went last year, what their outlook is for the upcoming season. As for what's new with me, well, as most of you know from listening to the last episode, I was in Canada, my home country, for the last 3 weeks, and despite a little bit of sickness that went around and jet lag and stuff like that, we had an amazing time. It was good to be in Winnipeg in winter. Yeah, can you believe somebody's actually saying that? Winnipeg in winter was good. The weather was actually pretty nice. We got out to a couple festivals. I got out to a Winnipeg Jets NHL hockey game, which if you follow hockey, you know that this is not their season. So the results of the game were not great, but being there was a lot of fun. Of course, being with family and friends was also great. So I've been having a really good time. By the way, some of you might be wondering where Wizzo is at these days. And actually, that's a good question. I'm not really sure myself. We've kind of lost touch a little bit, but I know he's been really busy with moving and just with things going on at work and stuff. And so I'm hoping to hook up with him real soon because I kind of miss having a co-host, and Wizzo is a pretty fun guy to talk to. So Wiz, if you're listening, man, get in touch with me. Let's get this thing going for 2016 and have a good season doing podcasting and stuff. All right. Well, I think we're going to jump right into today's feature interview or talk. So stick around, listen to that, and then afterwards, actually, I'm going to share a little bit just about what's new with the Tigers or what's been going on in the exhibition season and so on and so forth. So, yeah, good to be back, everybody. I am back in Japan. The podcasts are going to be more frequent. The website updates will also be frequent. So stay with me, bear with me. Thanks for your patience through this rough time as far as updating goes. Let's go, Tigers! Catch you in a bit, folks. All right, on today's show, I have got a special guest from TokyoSwallows.com. We are here with Kozo, and welcome to the show, first of all.
Thanks, Trevor.
Yeah, it's great to have you on, and you know, I really am glad that you have got something set up. Like, you've got your website, and I understand you've also got a couple of podcasts on the go. And so, you know, from what I hear, you're a pretty avid Swallows fan or a follower of the team. So tell us a little bit about, like, why you're in Japan or how you got to Japan. What's your connection with Japan?
Sure. So I was born and raised in Montreal, and then I went to University of Ontario. And after I graduated university, I wasn't a good time to start a career in what I wanted to do. So I'm Japanese. My parents are both Japanese. I have Japanese citizenship. I never lived here. It was just a place I came, you know, on summer vacation. So we figured, you know, maybe come here for a couple of years. Worst case scenario, I could work at a konbini. And luckily, I didn't need to go there. And I'm still here. I'm in my seventh year now in Japan.
Okay. So before you came over, you know, you said your parents were Japanese. Like, could you speak the language fairly well, or was it just kind of a matter of understanding?
Both my parents are highly educated Japanese people, and I was an only child, so I had to speak Japanese at home. So speaking and listening, most people couldn't tell that I wasn't born and raised here. Oh, give me a pen and pencil, I'm going to have a hard time writing anything beyond my name and address. But thankfully, we have computers for writing Japanese.
Right. So you grew up in Montreal. Like, do you speak French as well then, or did you just
– I speak enough Quebecois to have conversations with people in bars, but I can't really translate or anything. I have a really hard time speaking with, like, French people from France and Tokyo. So first I thought it was just because I hadn't spoken for it for a long time, but then I went home and I just turned on Radio Canada and, you know, understood everything. So clearly there's something about the Quebecois accent. I couldn't tell you what the difference is, but I definitely understand one better than the other.
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah, I actually did a home study or a whatever in Quebec one summer, and I was actually told by the locals that I sounded kind of local, which I was pretty happy about. But then I also know that that's nowhere near Parisian French. And so, yeah I can understand that. And but we won't switch into French here. We won't switch into Japanese. We'll stick to English. But it's good to know your background. And I can see that you're wearing an Expos hat right now. Were you a fan growing up? Or?
Yeah, I was a huge Montreal Expos fan. I became a fan in 1994. And if you know anything about Montreal Expos history, that's like the worst time to become an Expos fan, but it's the beginning of the end.
Certainly, it's the heartbreaking year to become a fan. Yeah.
But the team moved out of the city the same year I did, so I sort of had a clean break, and I kind of became an objective baseball fan for a while after that.
All right. Did you have a favorite player on that team, the Expos team, I should say?
I was a big Jose Vidro, like Orlando Cabrera. Obviously loved Vladimir Guerrero, and for the longest time, I thought he was the best player I ever saw live.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he is outstanding, and I know that he's up for potentially being in the Hall of Fame very soon, and I hope he gets in. I was a fan of his as well, and I was a distant Expos fan growing up, and I went to a couple games at the old Olympic Stadium.
Nice.
Yeah, now that I'm here, I've kind of cut my ties a bit with MLB, and here we are. So let's move on. So you're following the Swallows, and obviously you're living in Tokyo, and so you had the choice of several teams when you got there. It could have been the Giants, it could have been the Bay Stars, the Cebu Lions, the Chiba Lotte Marines, or the Swallows, as far as local or nearby teams go. Why did you go with the Swallows?
Well, so I actually didn't really have much of a choice in that my grandfather was actually a Swallows fan from their founding as the Coqtet Swallows.
Wow.
So like my aunts and uncles are Swallows fans. So I was always kind of exposed to Swallows baseball when I came to Japan. I didn't really understand it. I wouldn't say I was a fan, but, you know, it was what was around me. And in the 90s, they won a bunch of championships. So I sort of had the impression they were strong.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I came here, I was living with my uncle and he'd have the game like on every night. So I watched with him. And then basically, it came down to a choice between the Swallows and the Giants. And the Swallows just had a much better stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot cheaper to be a Swallows fan. I was freelancing for a while, so I didn't have like an office to go to, so I would just be like in front of a computer all day. So just going to the stadium, kind of like treat it like my neighborhood bar and kind of start meeting the same people and hanging out with people was very also important when I first got here.
Right. Okay. Oh, really cool. So did it take you a while to embrace the Japanese game because you grew up, you know, kind of watching MLB and stuff like that? Or what did it come pretty naturally?
It came pretty naturally. I like small ball. And actually, so TokyoSwallows.com, the site I write for now, was just huge help too. And I got to know Chris, Dave, and Garrett, those guys, and those guys are my best friends now. But it was just made it easier to follow and, you know, comment and throw some ideas out and learn really quickly. So I'm glad the site existed and I'm glad to be able to contribute to that project now.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Obviously then the site has been around longer than you have been a fan of the team or writing for the site. How long has the site been around?
I think the site started in midway through the 2008 season.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they started writing game reports for every game, like after the first or second month of that season. And there has been a write-up for every Swallows game since then. So mid-08.
That's outstanding.
It started with the three guys, basically, and has at times grew with me, and then people have come and gone. So we've had up to five writers at one time.
And now you were saying, okay, so you're covering, or you guys as a team or as a group, you're covering every game. Does that mean that somebody is at every home game or?
It just depends. We basically assign games on like days of the week, so I tend to take Thursday games. So it kind of depends on the person. So some people, you know, watch it on TV. I go to almost every Jingu game. I've been to almost every Jingu game the last couple of years. So there's also a different perspective and style. Some people really, you know, go and read the Japanese box score and just try to fill in the details. So it's a little different. There's no consistency necessarily, but we just try to get the information out there in English and add a little bit of our flavor.
Perhaps in a sense, it's kind of like, I don't know this, like I haven't really read your guys' site that much, but maybe it's almost like a Sports Illustrated in a sense that, I mean, they've got several different writers on staff and each writer has its own flavor. And so when people pick up the magazine or, for example, read the website, then, you know, they get a little taste of everything and they might have preferred writers or whatever, but that's pretty cool that you guys have got a team.
Yeah, we don't have as much editorial content as we want. So everything's kind of filtered through game reports and a lot of people just want to read, you know, who won. It's very clear looking at our stats that if we won, people tend to click on it. So if you write something in there, it'll reach a wider audience. But we cover everything, win, loss, or tie.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I've noticed that as well. Like when the Tigers are going through slumps, man, the site takes a dive. And then if they get a couple wins going, then, yeah, everybody wants to read about it. So, I mean, that's understandable. That's the nature of the beast. And so, well, anyways, let's move forward and let's talk a little bit about the Yakult Swallows themselves. So obviously 2015 was a great year for the team as far as comparing it to the previous years. For those that don't know, the Swallows finished in last place in 2013 and 2014, and then they won the Central League pennant in 2015. How did you feel about the performance last year? Did you really think that they had the right team together, or do you think that they had it all together earlier, like maybe in 2014 or whatever, and it just didn't come together? Or what's your take on the 2015 season overall?
It is magical and it's pretty amazing. Like, I always felt the Swallows always had pieces, but previous years we definitely had a lot of injury issues, and you know that became the go-to excuse. So we would have done a lot better than if those players didn't get injured. But I don't think any of us expected a championship team. So, and I think definitely the manager change between 2014, 2015 was also huge. Mm-hmm. So,
you think Manaka made a lot of like great decisions, like game time decisions, or do you think it was just his overall use of different players in different places in the lineup? Or what do you think was key to his success?
I think there was a lot less bunting. The fact that, you know, we put Kawabata, who won the batting title last year in the CL, is the second batter. In the past, the Swallows, like, second guy was like an automatic bunter. Mm-hmm. After, you know, Aoki got on and Aoki had a crazy high, you know, on base percentage. But, you know, it was always number two was bunt. You know, Miyamoto is a big bunt guy. So we definitely cut down on that. But also it seemed not that our previous manager was like a slave driver with like, you know, tons of laps and, you know, just tiring players out. But it seemed Monaco is even more just, you know, let the players be the players and just, you know, let them take their own responsibility rather than be top down. And I think that's worked for the Swallows and the players. And I get the sense that they're a very close-knit team. And a lot of people remark about that, how the Swallows seem to just be very close family.
What I noticed, at least in my limited, watching of games and stuff, was they seemed really loose as well. You know, it didn't seem like there was a lot of tension or a lot of, like, any issues within the clubhouse or anything like that. And I think that goes a long ways towards success as well.
Yeah, the Swallows are a very young team, you know. The oldest players were like Ishikawa and like Hatake. So it was very, very close in age. And the Miyamoto retirement and having someone who's like that great, but clearly wasn't, you know, playing at the same level as he used to, that awkwardness wasn't there. So, mm-hmm. And I think the whole being underdog narrative helped the Swallows too, you know. We were last place. No one's expecting any better of us. So, you know, just give it argon.
Yeah, and I think it was – I read an article it was after the season was over, but it was an article that concerned Manaka and a decision that he made. I think it was around the end of April. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Swallows were in the middle of a 9-game losing streak or something crazy like that. Like,
right.
They were looking like the 2013 and 2014 model, where they were maybe going to finish in the lower half of the standings. And it was actually a game against our Hanshin Tigers. And
oh, is this the bunt story with how he saw Hanshin bunt and said, no, it would actually didn't work out there, but he's like, no, I got to stick with my plan. Even it's not going to work. And they lost the game, but they ended up not losing more than not going on a more than 3-game losing streak the rest of the season.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So when I read that, I mean, especially with us having Yuta Kawada as our chief, right. I really felt like, man, we'd love to have a bit of a gutsier manager and somebody that's willing to, you know, be a little bit more aggressive, and hopefully we've got one now. But anyways, let's move back to your team, because that's what we're here for. So what happened in the offseason? I mean, I know that Tony Barnett left, which leaves a bit of a void or a bit of a gap, you know, a very successful closer. Did any other players depart, retire, anything like that? And who did you guys pick
up? Tony Barnett and Orlando Roman left the team. Mm-hmm. Tony obviously went to the States. Orlando Roman was not re-signed, probably because he was, I think, 37 or 38, and I think the team felt they could go younger. That's it in terms of, like, significant cuts, I think, off the top of my head. And then the team signed Sakaguchi from Oryx and Ugumori, and then they signed 3 foreigners. That's right. They got rid of Lasting's Middleage, too. And then the team signed 3 pitchers, Kyle Davies, Luis Perez, and Josh Lukey, who is a rapist.
Yeah. I think I mentioned that on Twitter the other day and nobody responded or anything like that, but, we don't have to really jump into his, personal past or anything like that.
Yeah. And if anyone wants to know how we feel about that, we recorded a podcast about our foreigner signings. So,
well, I'm going to have to check that out, because I am curious about what you guys think. But, you know, we're not necessarily going to jump into that now. Yeah. But but speaking of Lukey and Davies, and who's the third one you said?
Luis Perez, formerly of the Blue Jays.
Oh, cool. What kind of role do you see them in this season? Like, are one of those three going to end up being the closer, or what's going to go on there?
Logan Ondrasek, who is an excellent setup guy for us last year, sure, I think is going to inherit the closer role this year. So basically, of those three pitchers, because Ballantyne is also going to keep playing, and Logan Ondrasek probably has a closer job, one of those guys is not going to play. So right now, based on what's going on in spring training, I think Kyle Davies is going to win a starting spot in the rotation. And then Perez or Lukey is going to be an arm in the bullpen. But I don't really have a great read on which one is going to make it. Hoping it will be Perez. He's also a left-hander. It's always nice to have good left-handers.
Oh, for sure. So do you think then that the losses that the Swallows experienced versus the gains that they've got here, do you think that there's a significant shift in the team's power, or do you think that they're still as strong as they were last year?
It's basically question mark. Like, there's Kyle Davies looks good, and I have no real read on how good or bad those relievers are going to be. So it's kind of up to them. I don't think we became significantly stronger. But I don't see us being significantly weaker either. Like, Sakaguchi was brought in to kind of give us competition in the center field area, which we've had a bit of a logjam in. And he's looked good in the spring, but he's not, like, the long-term solution.
He was a Senryoku guy? Was he, like,
cut? Yeah, he was cut from Oryx. Mm-hmm. Ugumori, too. Although I don't think he's actually going to factor, at least not in the beginning of the season.
Okay.
But he's a veteran, and I think he'll give Ueda and some of our younger guys who are battling in that position a little bit of a kick in the ass, hopefully.
You guys had Ueda and Hiana, I think, that did a lot of the...
Yeah, and also we tried playing Yuhei at center, too, for a while.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So my understanding, though, is, at least from looking at last year's Swallows, is that the strengths are the bats and the relief core, and it seems like that's where a lot of the offseason moves occurred as well. And so, yeah, like, I wonder, though, what's going to happen.
I think the bats are about the same, maybe even a little bit better if Coco Ballantyne comes back, you know, fully healthy. He certainly is going to put a scare in a lot of people. Yeah, the bullpen is huge because, yeah, definitely our starting pitching is the greatest. It finally went back down to about league average last year, and we were like, you know, a full standard deviation of, you know, worse than that in previous seasons. So,
yeah.
So, and also, yeah, and it also kind of depends how the other teams around us do. I felt last year, offensively, a lot of the other teams are struggling, so our starters didn't necessarily need to be perfect. You know, they can let in three runs and the offense could still beat that. And then, you know, just last six innings and then the bullpen could shut it down the rest of the way. So if, like, if Yokohama or the Giants or the Tigers, you know, really, really fine. Well, I guess Yokohama's always strong offensively, but if, like, the Tigers or the Carp or the Giants really find their bats again, I think it won't be a great year for the Swallows.
So it's a weakness that could be exposed if other teams can patch up their weak points.
That being said, you know, there's Kyle Davies might be, you know, the next Chris Johnson. And we also drafted Jurihara, who looks pretty solid. I think he pitched like five innings of shutout ball against SoftBank today in an exhibition game. And I think he might be going into the rotation. So you never know. I mean, last year the Swallows like had started the season with like 12 games with their starters, or the whole not allowing more than three runs or something in 12 games in a row or something along those lines. And that was helpful. So, you know,
the guys
as long as you set a tone.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say the guys at JBW made a big issue of that, or they definitely brought that up every week. They said, you know, the Swallows continued their streak or whatever. Yeah, I mean, that was a definitely an impressive way to start the season.
Yeah. But, you know, it felt a little soft, but at the end of the day, it kind of, compared to where we were the year before and the year before that, it, like, our starters were pretty solid last year. So maybe if they take it the next step, we'll be even better. I think if they're about the same, or if some people make gains and some people fall off, I think we'll hopefully be okay. But yeah, the bullpen stability would definitely help with that. So.
Right, right. Now tell me, were there any guys on the 2015 team that you think maybe either overachieved or underachieved? Not necessarily that they overachieved, but they had that career year that the team had been waiting for or whatever or anything like that. I know you mentioned it's a young team, but tell me about some of the guys that stood out either for better or for worse.
Well, Yamada Tetsuo, I don't think it would be fair to expect him to go 3-3 again. A lot of people do think he can do it. I think he could do it, but you know, I think if he has like, you know, a 25 homer year, you know, even closer to 300, we shouldn't really be too surprised. Let's see who else overachieved last year. I'm not entirely sure how good Hatakeyama is going to be this year. He's injured right now. He, I think, is like 34, I want to say.
Okay, he's still got a lot of years
there. Yeah, but he's a big guy who's not healthy, so he's going to deteriorate fast, I think. So
okay.
So, yeah, he overachieved, but I think over the last couple of years, he's changed his batting approach, and that's really what let him be good the last 2 years. So as long as he doesn't get injured, he'll be good, but I'm not sure if – well, I guess triple-digit RBIs is really about who's batting in front of him and how they get on base. So,
true.
But I think he's a you overachieved a bit last year. And Kawabata maybe isn't up for a batting title, but he'll bat a solid 300. And yeah, we'll see how Akiyoshi had a career last year, and he pitched a lot of games. And same with Andrusek. So hopefully there's no, second-year slump.
Right. Now, so Andrusek was in his first year with the team last year.
That's correct.
Akiyoshi's been around for a little while, right?
Well, I think last year was his second year, basically, with the team.
Okay.
He was drafted in the 2013 draft, I think. And he comes out of Panasonic. So he's an industrial league guy, so he's kind of up there in age. But I think this is only his third year. But I don't think he's ever pitched 70 games in a season in any level. So we'll see how he bounces up for that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Now, I know one of the big health issues for the team last year, one of the big injuries was Vladimir Ballantyn. And he's coming into camp this year healthy,
he's definitely coming. He's slimmer. And he's healthy as far as I can tell and as far as anyone else can tell. Mm-hmm. He's not like launching home runs in every exhibition game, but I'm not sure. And, you know, his 60 home run season just felt magical and just felt like, you know, every time he swung the bat, it left the field. So it's probably not fair to hold him to that expectation, but I think a lot of people feel if he's not, you know, hitting home runs every other game, you know, how good is he really?
Right. But it's interesting, like if you look just at Major League Baseball, for the most part, the guys that set the home run records are guys that didn't even come close to duplicating that number in seasons after that or even before that. Like at, you know, Barry Bonds with his 73, he never reached 50 in any other season. Or Roger Maris before that with his 61, right? He didn't come anywhere near that either. And so I don't know. I mean, that's not to say that Ballantyn
I don't think 60 or even 50 is, but, you know, right now you sort of hope he can hit 30. If he's healthy.
Well, I mean, just having him in the lineup, though, you know, to join, you know, Kawabata and
Yamada, he's certainly scary.
Hatakeyama, so. I mean, it just adds that extra scare into any pitcher that's going to face this lineup. So,
lose something on defense. And I think being effective defense was also what helped our pitching bounce back last year. So, I'm kind of a big proponent of just having Coco Ballantyn on our bench to just, you know, bring out in leverage situations to scare the crap out of relievers. But obviously if he's doing well, he needs to start.
Sure. But that's actually not a bad thing to do either. And then during interleague play, just use him as the DH when they're playing on the road or whatever. But so let's look a little bit at the draft as well as the farm team. I'm not sure how knowledgeable you are of your team's farm squad.
I can name all the players, but I can't tell you how they batted in, like, Negan games or anything.
I know, that's fine. But, first let's look at the draft. And obviously, most of the people that are listening to this podcast probably know what happened, where both the Swallows and the Tigers went after Shun Takayama, and there was a kind of mix-up, and we ended up with Shun Takayama. Yeah. How much do you think that hurt the Swallows? Because, I mean, it doesn't seem like they're really hurting at the plate, and, I mean, maybe they would have used him as their center fielder. I'm not really sure, but what's your take on that and getting Judy Hara instead?
I think Takayama would have been a nice addition. I think having a outfielder that can hit for average would have been nice, but actually I read a quote that said the Tigers basically took Takayama, not because he was so good, obviously he is, but sort of as a FU to the Swallows and to sort of assert dominance. But so be interesting to see how the Tigers use him. I think Harajuri looks like a pretty solid pickup. I saw him pitch at Jingu and in university in the Toto League, and he looked pretty solid. I think he's not. I don't think he has a super high ceiling, so but he's a guy who can contribute right away and be like a third or fourth rotation guy, or, you know, fourth or fifth maybe, but really contribute right away. His stuff and his control look pretty good. So
is it looking like he's going to make the Ichigun squad right from the start then?
I would based on his numbers, but again, it's like really hard to find good analysis, or like, because the coaches don't talk to the media the way they do back home, where, like, you know, you have beat writers and, you know, you can just read a single column to kind of get a really good pulse on the team, and especially the Swallows, because, you know, they don't have like a dedicated channel. Like, on the other hand, like, I think the Tigers and like the Carp, who are like really regional and local, there might be too much information out there that's really hard to digest. But so, based on what I see on, like, on paper, because I'm not even watching these games, I think he's looks like he's pitching well enough to be in the rotation, and I think the Swallows would definitely give him a try in the beginning of the season for a couple of starts and send him down if he doesn't look good. That would be my guess, but I don't really have a great read on whether that's how the coaches are thinking.
Right, fair enough. I mean, it is always hard to tell what exactly they're going to do and all as well. Because, I mean, as well as he might pitch in spring training, they might say he needs more time or whatever. So, anyways, is there anyone else in that draft that caught your eye, or anyone else, any big names, or anyone else that you think has a chance to make the squad right away? Or
this year, we drafted mostly like high school guys, and it seems, you know, it's like the next Yamada type guys, guys who are going to need like two, three, 4 years to really make a mark. So not expecting anyone else. They also drafted a guy, Yamasaki, I think is the fifth round, who's an outfielder, and he might become like a pinch hitter. I know, a pinch runner, defensive replacement type guy. Sort of compete with Hyane, but everyone else looks like they're not coming in for a couple of years. But I'm hearing a lot of positive things about their second round pick, Hirooka, and how he's just like blasting the ball already as a high school kid. But yeah, I don't expect him to be anywhere the first team this year. And if he is, that means people got injured and something went really, really wrong.
I see. Okay. Well, let's hope for your guys' sake that that doesn't happen. Now, how did the farm team perform last year, or what's your take on the farm team? Do you guys have a lot of prospects that could come up and make some big noise, if not this season, the next season, or in the near future?
The Swallows farm team is kind of weird in that, actually, last year it became kind of a joke because they were running out of fielders. So they actually signed one of the players that recently retired and became a bullpen pitcher. They basically re-signed him in a say contract so they can put him in the outfield, because they just didn't have enough bodies. So Abe Kenta got signed. He was a pitcher, and yeah, they signed him to play outfield because they were running out of bodies, and they were like playing a lot of people out of position. That being said, the Swallows have a lot of guys who are kind of like the potential like shortstop of the future, like three or four guys. But obviously, you know, there's not enough playing time for all of those guys at shortstop. So the Swallows basically won the Eastern League 2 years ago. 3 years. Yeah, no, 2 years ago. Monica won the Eastern League championship. Sorry, 3 years ago. Yeah, Monica won the Eastern League championship as the manager of the Farm Swallows. Then he became a bench coach, and then he became the manager. So they were strong then. I think there's a lot of interesting players, not a lot of like sexy pitchers on our farm team. And I think as a team, I think they were in last place last year in the Eastern League. But I don't, you know, as long as the key prospects are doing well, I don't really care if they win or lose.
Yeah, team standings are not so important on the farm, right? Obviously, you know, you want your players to develop and be able to contribute to the big squad, and hopefully that'll happen. All right, well, let's quickly wrap things up, but I actually want to hear what you think about the 2016 season, both for your Yakult Swallows and also for my Hanshin Tigers. How do you think they'll finish? I mean, obviously last year it was first for the Swallows and a very lucky third place for the Tigers, but what's your take on this year's Swallows? What's your take on this year's Tigers, if you know anything about?
I actually know a lot about the Tigers, or at least individual players. The master at my local bar is a Tigers fan, so he has the game on a lot. So I watch a lot more. Like, I think the Tigers, I see the second most out of all the CL teams because of that. In terms of the Swallows, I see the Swallows probably being in A class, top three. But, you know, I'm always don't want to jinx things. So I'm always tend to just say probably not going to repeat. But, you know, you never know what happens after you make it into the climax series. So I do see the Swallows being in the top three. I think the Tigers, it's really going to depend basically on how things change because of Kanemoto, like what kind of regime he brings in and then how the players respond to that. Like, I kind of see Kanemoto as like one of those old school guys, like player that I would never want to play under if I was a player. But then again, you know, a lot of players respond to that, and a lot of managers with that style have been very successful in Japan. So it doesn't mean it can't work, but just, you know, personally not my cup of tea. But I've always seen the Tigers as like a team with a lot of good players that aren't really established, like Toritani at short. And, you know, then, you know, you guys have a ton of interesting guys at catcher, third base. I guess first base, Gomez is still got his spot, but you know, you have like Nishioka, Uemoto, you know, and Yamato, you know, these guys can play anywhere, but they don't have their space. So like a lot of interesting players, not a lot of like just established, okay, we know we can just slot these guys in here. I've always felt the Tigers have been very schizophrenic, and I think it's partially because of like how harsh the Osaka media is, and people, like, if as soon as someone struggles, you know, they're sent down and on to the next one, and it's not a healthy environment to coach. But, you know, Kanemoto seems to be like the strong guy that can just say, no, shut up, guys, I know what I'm doing. And even if it's not working, you know, let it ride for a bit. So I think the Tigers and the Bay Stars with their new management can do big unexpected moves either direction. So I can see the Tigers winning and losing. I can see the Bay Stars making a huge move from last to first as well because of Rami-chan, but it's just really hard to tell how it's all going to shake out.
Oh, sure. For sure.
Like I've read interviews with like Yano about the catching situation for the Tigers, and you know, maybe you guys are going to start using Okazaki, which would be interesting, but... And that might work. So, I could see the Tigers. So I can see the Tigers anywhere from like fifth to the championship. Right. I have them in a much wider range of outcomes, I guess, as I would say.
Okay. Now, are you guys going to do a show with your crew where you predict the Central League standings, or do you guys not?
We're trying to get together. So the AAH podcast I do online, but the other one we actually have to get together in a room to talk about it. So it's these days it's hard to get together, but yeah, hopefully we'll have a CL prediction show out before the season starts.
Sounds good. Well, listen, Kozo, it's been nice having you on the show. And just for all you folks that are Tigers fans, I mean, I really recommend that you give the podcast a listen. TokyoSwallows.com is where you can go to find more information about that, I believe, right?
Yep. Okay. It's not a porn site.
No, it isn't. Trust me, I've been there. To yours, that is. And I've listened to the podcast. It's really good. You guys have that good chemistry, and you all have like a good knowledge of the team. And so I'm actually going to check out your guys' prediction show and probably start subscribing to your podcast as well. Check it out. But again, thanks for coming on and
thanks for inviting
us a little bit more about the Tokyo, the Yakult Swallows, because honestly, like, as far as myself goes, and even a lot of the fans that listen to our show, we're really kind of in this Hanshin Tigers bubble. And sometimes we think our team is the best or we've got the best prospects, but you know, it's good to look outside of that and see how other teams are doing. So, That's great. We're going to also do a prediction show probably just before the season starts. So if you get a chance, check it out, Kozo.
Will do. Yeah, I'm subscribed to your podcast on my podcast player. So
excellent. Appreciate
it. I'll definitely listen to it. Pops up.
Sounds good. All right. Well, take care, and we will catch you another time. Everybody, if you want to read more about the Yakult Swallows, it's tokyoswallows.com. Very simple to spell. And as he said, it's a clean site, so go for it. All right, Kozo. Have a great season.
All right. Have a good one. All right.
Thanks. Later. All right. Once again, I'd just like to thank our special guest, Kozo, from tokyoswallows.com. And if you want to read a little bit more about Kozo and how he became a Yakult Swallows fan and what his story is all about, I'm going to put a link to kind of his story in the show notes. So if you check that out, you can find it there. It's actually part of their website. I'm looking forward to the next couple of podcasts where we're going to be hooking up with a Bay Stars fan as well as Dragons fan. And hopefully I can find somebody that can talk to me about the Kyojin, the Omiyuri Giants, because even though we don't like them, we still want to hear what's going on with them in the off season and what their outlook is for 2016. Also, I do want to do a Central League prediction or Outlook episode where myself and perhaps Wizzo or somebody who has got the time and willingness to be on the show, we can talk a little bit about what we think is going to go down in the Central League. Also, of course, the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is, I think, in the near future doing a Central League prediction show. So for those of you who are interested in hearing other people's predictions, people who are maybe not biased one way or the other when it comes to the Hanshin Tigers, you can check that out. There also has been a Central League prediction written on a blog, which is the Graveyard Baseball website, graveyardbaseball.blogspot.com, I believe it is. Those guys are followers of the Saitama Seibu Lions, but they also are really good at looking at the entire league and all of NPB. So you can check out their Central League forecast as well, which they put out in recent days. So if you go to their page, it'll be near the top. Pretty interesting stuff. Also, I'm still hoping to do a fantasy baseball Hanshin Tigers only league, just a little thing between myself and a couple of the main followers of the website / Facebook / podcast. I'm going to invite some special guys on, or guys and gals or whatever, and we are going to kind of draft Hanshin Tigers players and see who can draft the best team. So be on the lookout for that as well. I'm hoping to record that as well, turn that into a podcast episode. So, I mean, if all goes well, in the next 2 weeks before the season starts, there may be up to 4 or maybe 5 more podcasts. We're going to hopefully be firing on all cylinders, and that's after a month of almost complete stagnancy. So again, I apologize for not being consistent in my production of podcasts and website updates, but hopefully the rest of March is going to be just a time of mass production. All right, so I want to look a little bit at the preseason, at some of the exhibition games, and just players that have stood out, just to kind of quickly run through the scores of what's happened in the month of March. We had a couple of games in Fukuoka against the SoftBank Hawks on March the 3rd and March the 4th. Both of those games ended in 3-3 ties. Then we came back to Koshien, and we've actually been at Koshien now for 5 straight games, and we've got one more before we hit the road again. We hosted the Chiba Lotte Marines and lost 4-2. We hosted the Yomiuri Kyojin Giants and whacked them 6-1. Then on the 8th, we faced the Saitama Seibu Lions and lost 4-2. Got a day off, and then we faced the Yokohama DeNA Bay Stars and beat them 5-2. And then today, March the 12th, we hosted the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters and lost by a score of 1-0. We also face them tomorrow, which for you will probably be today or maybe even already in the past, depending on when this podcast hits the airwaves. Anyways, looking at these games one by one. I'm going to go through this as quickly as I can just because it's preseason. We don't want to get into a lot of detail. But so the first game against SoftBank, we had Iwata on the mound, and he allowed 3 runs in 5 innings. And we scored our runs later, a little bit later in the game than they scored theirs. But anyways, we ended up finishing in a tie in that one. And then the very next day, again, we finished tied 3-3. Messenger was on the mound for us. He pitched 4 innings and allowed 2 runs. It looks like he ran into a bit of trouble in the third inning, allowing a home run. And that was where those runs came into play. So kind of unfortunate. We'll get to this in a little bit later, but actually Messenger gave up another home run today. Interestingly, he gave up the home run against the Hawks to Yuki Yanagita, who was last year's Pacific League MVP. He also went on to hit another home run in the 6th inning against Rafael Dolis. So he really went to town on our team. But again, we were down 3-2 heading into the 7th inning, and we got the tying run on the board. And that was it for scoring, even though we had another chance in the 8th. As for players that stood out in those games, unfortunately, I didn't get to watch either of those games, and I've only been able to watch one game so far this preseason. But it looks like some of our young guys have really been making things tough for Kanemoto when it comes to making decisions. Ogata had a good game in the first of those two, as did Yokota. In fact, Yokota has been having just amazing games almost every game. It seems like he's always getting multi-hits in every game, which is really cool to see. Okazaki came in as the backup catcher and got a hit in the first game. And then in the second game, Hojo actually hit 2 doubles. They were both RBI doubles, so good for him. And then other than that, we didn't really have anybody that got multiple hits. But it looks like Takayama got a hit, and he's been hitting regularly as well. Ogata got a hit in that one as well. And Yokota also got a hit, so pretty solid stuff. Moving forward, on the 5th, we faced the Chiba Latte Marines in the first preseason game at Koshien this season. So it was kind of Kanemoto's managerial debut on home turf. Unfortunately, it didn't go as well as we'd hoped, right? We scored 2 runs. One of them was unearned. I think we ended up scoring one of them. The earned run that we got, or the one that we actually deserved, I guess you could say, came in the 8th inning, again on a Hojo hit. So he's kind of been really making a case for getting some more time up on the top squad. As for where he plays, I mean, your guess is as good as mine, because he's not going to be getting any time at shortstop, barring some freak injury a Toritani injury. He won't be playing shortstop. He would likely be playing either third or second, or, man, who knows, just pinch hitter, pinch runner. It's really hard to say. But Hojo, again, had a great game. Other than that, again, we didn't have any other guys that got multiple hits, but Nishioka has been hitting the ball. He's been getting, you know, roughly 1 hit per game. Ogata got another hit in this one. Takayama got another hit in this one. Yokota actually did not get a hit. But Okazaki, the catcher, again, got another hit in this one. It looks like the 5th inning was the big backbreaker for us. And that was actually Aoyagi, who is the 5th round pick this past draft. And he came in, and actually, if I remember reading correctly, the first 10 pitches that he threw were all balls. He walked the bases loaded, then allowed a sacrifice fly and a base hit. So 2 runs came in against him in the 5th inning, and then we allowed another 2 runs in the 9th inning when Takahashi, Akifumi Takahashi, who is another new acquisition, came over from the Dragons. He allowed 2 runs. Only one of which was earned because of an error by first baseman. Who would that have been? Maybe Haraguchi? I think he came in and replaced Gomez in that game. Anyways, 4-2 loss. These things happen. And then the very next day, we came up against the Giants and had a great old time against Utsumi, who is a veteran pitcher for them. As a matter of fact, we ended up with 6 straight hits in the 4th inning. Just a great old time against him. Multiple hits by Toritani, Nishioka, and Takayama in this one. Yokota also got a hit again. And as for our pitching, we had Kyuji Fujikawa on the mound for 4 innings. He allowed 1 run. And then Moriya, who was a, I'm going to say, 4th round pick in 2014, came in for 2 clean innings. Ishizaki, who was the 2nd round pick, pitched a clean inning. And Okida as well, and Tsuru as well. So we got some good relief pitching and actually a decent start from Fujikawa as well, who only allowed a run in the first inning. And then after that was quite clean the rest of the way. So again, I didn't get to watch the game, so I don't know how quality the outing was for him. But, you know, a win's a win, and any win against the Giants is wonderful news for the Tigers, right? Okay, moving on. March the 8th, we faced the Cebu Lions, and actually we went back and forth in this one with us scoring in the first, them scoring the second, us scoring the third, them scoring in the fourth. So it was 2-2 heading into the 5th inning, and then in the 6th, they broke it open with 2 runs. And those 2 runs came against Ando, and that was after Fujinami pitched 5 innings of 2-run ball. Fujinami has not looked his best so far this preseason. Some people are worried because he had the shoulder injury at the end of last season that only came into the light after the season was over. I'm not too worried about him simply because I think that he's probably using this as an adjustment period. I don't think it's a health issue. I think he's just testing things out. And, you know, I don't worry that much when ace pitchers give up a lot of runs in the preseason. I mean, if you look at last preseason, if I'm not mistaken, Shohei Ohtani of the Fighters had a terrible preseason, but when he got into regular season mode, he was just fine. And actually, he was pretty close to winning the Sawamura Award this past year. So I wouldn't worry about Fujinami allowing a few runs in the preseason. So everybody just, you know, maybe calm down, take a deep breath, and everything will be all right. So in this game, we had only one guy with multiple hits, and that was Umeno. And that's an interesting guy to get multi-hits because he's one who really his job, or at least his position as, you know, potential future full-time catcher, is really in jeopardy because of the great preseason play of Okazaki. And also kind of uninspired play by Umeno. And everybody knows that his job, his ability to call a game has already been questioned by media, by pitchers, and by fans as well. So we'll see if Okazaki is able to call a really good game. I heard that in today's game with Messenger on the mound, Messenger kind of praised Okazaki for calling a great game. So, you know, things are starting to look a little bit more like Okazaki might be the main guy this season. And he's kind of an unknown to a lot of recent fans and even people that have been following the team for a while because he hasn't had a lot of time on the big team. But, you know, it's a really interesting thing that this offseason, not only did Kanemoto say that everybody's got kind of a clean start and everybody's kind of, you know, we're all lined up at the starting line here and the race is on and nobody's got a lead over anybody is what he said. But also, battery coach, which would mean the pitching and catching coach, I guess, Akihiro Yano said the exact same thing. And when he said that to the catchers, I think it really lit a fire under Okazaki, who has been kind of struggling to find himself and find playing time. Maybe he's kind of opened his eyes and he's really gotten his, you know, his act together and has been motivated. And so he's really been having a great spring. So that's that. Let's move on to March the 10th, which was a game against the DeNA BayStars. We put Iwata on the mound again for this one. He pitched 5 strong, allowed 1 run. He was followed up by Shimamoto, who went 2 innings and allowed 1 run. And then Takahashi and Takamiya, the 2 lefty relievers, each pitched clean innings. 1 clean inning each, I should say. As for our bats, we had Yokota with multi-hits and Okazaki with multi-hits. Again, these are 2 guys that last season did not play at all on the parent club. I think maybe Okazaki had 1 at-bat or 1 inning or a couple innings of play. Other than that, nothing. But Yokota got 3 RBI on 2 hits, and Okazaki got 1 RBI on 2 doubles. So both did really well. Matt Haig, new import, got his first hit of the exhibition schedule, or exhibition season, I should say. In unofficial games, he hit the ball quite well. He got a few base hits in those, but this is the first officially recognized and recorded exhibition game hit for him. He hit a ball to left field, and then he scored on Yokota's hit to center. So congratulations, Matt Haig. I really hope that you're able to parlay that into a bunch of more hits and great success with Hanshin Tigers this season. So good job for the team with a 5-2 win. And then, as I said in today's game, it was a 1-0 loss to the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters. Despite the fact that our pitchers allowed just 2 hits, Messenger allowed 1, and that 1 hit was fatal because it was a home run to Sho Nakata. And that was in the second inning. That was the only hit that Messenger allowed. He also walked a couple of guys in the fifth, including walking Ohtani. But those are some really close pitches. I saw the game and I saw that Messenger was a little bit frustrated or kind of taken aback by the fact that these pitches were called balls. They were legitimately balls, but they were close calls. Perhaps they would have gone as strikes to another pitcher. But anyways, we're not going to go there. And then the only other hit that was allowed was in the sixth inning by Marcos Mateo, who allowed a single to Kensuke Tanaka. This one indeed is Tanaka, not Nakata. And that was just one that happened to get past the first baseman. It was not a really solid hit. Mateo also struck out 2 guys and just looked really good on the mound. I mean, his slider was working for him really well. His fastball was working for him really well as well. He ended up striking out Yo Daikan, I think his name is. He's a kind of Taiwanese background, but Japanese citizen. Great player. He struck out, and then also Sho Nakata struck out as well. So good job by the Tigers pitchers. Those are the only 2 hits allowed. Unfortunately, the Tigers hitters did not do so well and only recorded 6 hits in the game. I think they were all singles except for the ninth inning double by Hojo. So again, Hojo making a case for himself with a great hit. He was 1-for-2. Nishioka went 2-for-3. And really, you know, Nishioka is starting to make a case for himself to be the starting second baseman. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. Of course, with Uemoto also performing reasonably well. And then Yamato also sparkling in the field. But again, today he struggled with the bat. Grounder to second, a double play to pitcher, and then a grounder to first. And unfortunately, the double play and the grounder to first were both following Nishioka's hits. So one of them essentially negated the hit, and the other one advanced Nishioka to second base. But unfortunately, I mean, it was an interesting play. The Fighter's first baseman charged towards, really towards the home plate, thinking that Yamato was going to bunt. So Yamato really, I mean, if he had hit the ball with any force at all, it would have gotten past the first baseman. It would have been a base hit. Nishioka would have been on third. Yamato would have been on first, maybe second. And it would have been a great chance for a rally. But unfortunately, Yamato hit the ball with almost nothing on it. It went to the first baseman who was charging in. It was as though it were a bunt, even though it wasn't. And yeah, Nishioka advanced. Pardon me, pinch runner Uemoto advanced to second. And Yamato was out at first. So be it. And so really there were no big rallies for the Tigers in this game. They did get a runner on first and third with 2 outs in the seventh. And Fukudome proceeded to ground up to shortstop. And then in the ninth inning, we got a double from Hojo followed by a walk from Ryota Arai. And then Umeno struck out to end the game. So kind of unfortunate. But that's the way it goes. Again, exhibition games, the results are not everything. It's not that you're playing to win or lose all the time. You are playing to get in your practice, get in your swings, and even experiment, you know, just see how your adjustment of your swing works, or see how your adjustment in your pitches works, and so on and so forth. And so, You know, I'm not down on the Tigers for having lost two of their last three at home or three of five at home so far in this homestand. I mean, it is just the preseason. So we'll see. Right now, the Tigers have still got seven more exhibition games. We're going to see how those go. And then the season starts on March the 25th. So just to wrap things up a little bit, the players that have been scoring some points or making life a little bit harder for Kanemoto when it comes to deciding his starting roster. You've got Okazaki at catcher. You've got really Nishioka at second base. I think he's making a good case for himself. Hojo's making a good case for himself. Yokawa hasn't been playing on the parent squad for a while now, and I'm not sure why. Maybe I missed that bit of news or whatever, but he was really doing well for a good while there. Takayama, the first round draft pick from last season, he has been hitting the ball well in exhibition play, and from what I read in an article, he'll be playing every game until the end of the exhibition schedule just to see if he's worthy of a spot on the parent squad and even the, you know, starting lineup come regular season or not. So that'll be fun to see. And then also Shintaro Yokota, who is a third-year player, but he is just 20 years old because he was drafted out of high school. He's been hitting the ball like crazy as well. So it'll be fun to see if those two guys end up with outfield spots. Just to update you a little bit too, Egoshi was sent down to the farm, and I know a lot of people have great expectations on Taiga Egoshi, but he has not impressed Kanemoto. His swing, it looks like it's out of control, doesn't really have any rhyme or reason to it, and so he needs to get down there, work on his swing, get some consistency, get his balance back properly, learn to read pitches a little bit better, and so on and so forth. And so it's looking right now like Egoshi might not make the parent club roster for opening day, which is something that he was able to do last season. So let's see what happens there. I mean, I hope that he can bounce back well, but honestly, the outfield is looking a little bit clogged these days. So we'll see. Once again, like I said, we're going to talk about our Central League predictions as well as maybe our projections for opening day roster on a future episode. And I really hope to have a co-host with me at that time. By the way, one more note, actually next Saturday night, the 19th, I'm going to be heading into recording for my second spot on the Tigers Cast. That's a Japanese Hanshin Tigers podcast on their show. They're also doing kind of their preseason predictions and so on and so forth. And so I just found out it's going to be a show about the pitchers and what we expect out of the pitchers this season. So I'm going to have to start to do my homework because we're recording in about a week's time. And I really hope to sound a little bit smarter this time around than I did last time. So wish me well, everybody. And if you get a chance to listen in on their episodes the following week after that, it would be great. You'll be able to hear me a little bit. And, you know, again, hopefully I don't make a fool of myself. All right. So like I said, everyone, we are going to be back real soon. I hope to be back sooner than later with a new episode. But once again, thank you to Kozo for joining me. And we're going to be doing another one real soon. Stick around. It's going to be an exciting 2016 for the Hanshin Tigers. Thanks again. This was episode 20. Catch you next time. Tiger.